Hello and welcome to the Texas Tribune Tribcast for the last week of March. I'm reporter Reeve Hamilton here with editor-in-chief Evan Smith.
Hey now.
Managing editor Ross Ramsey.
Howdy.
And Ben Philpott of KUT in the Texas Tribune.
Hey now.
I managed to work Larry Sanders into the first minute of the podcast.
For the curious out there, I just started watching the Larry Sanders Show for the first time.
No one's curious about that, Reeve. Come on.
Man, you were in what grade when that started? How did...
I don't know if I was in a grade.
He was in negative second grade.
Anyway,
yeah.
We'll get back to Larry Sanders if we have time, but first we'll talk about the LBB and their dynamic economic impact statement, the state of gambling, and the disturbingly lax criminal justice system
in Hudspeth County,
state of Texas. Yeah.
Gone to pot, as we say.
Yeah.
Hey now.
We'll get to that later too.
Ben is kind of like the Hank Kingsley of this podcast. It's all becoming clear.
I'm not convinced that all of our listeners have seen the Larry Sanders Show.
Or that anyone's still listening at this point to the podcast.
That's right.
So the LBB, the Legislative Budget Board, came out with their required report on House Bill 1 and sort of its impact on the economy.
You have to score these things. You have to do a dynamic revenue analysis of these things. And basically they came out with a thing. The headline from it was basically that if you pass the budget that the House is going to look at this week, that it's going to cost 300,000 some odd jobs in 2012 and in 2013.
It's exactly 272,000 in 2012 and 335,000. Not exactly, approximately those
300,000 some odd jobs. So, as I was saying.
Shut up, Junior.
I took some time to write it out.
So basically they said, you know, if you do this budget, you have to have layoffs, and then there's this direct impact and there's this indirect impact, and that's how they're supposed to score it. And it's kind of a... You know, according to the rules, this is how you score these bills. So then, interestingly, the two heads of the LBB, is this panel of senators and House members, five from each, and the lieutenant governor and the speaker of the House. The speaker and the lieutenant governor immediately came out after this and said, que fromage, they really didn't like this thing at all. And because it looks like, you know, they're getting rid of 300,000 people and their four jobs and all of that kind of stuff. It was off message.
Yeah. The lieutenant governor and the speaker are both very French.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So then this week, Dale Kramer, who's the president of the Texas Taxpayers and Research Association, a former revenue estimator and the budget director for Ann Richards and for George Bush, came out with a letter that said, you know, basically it said, this thing is correct, but it's only half the story. You're measuring the effect of these budget cuts against the current budget. You're not measuring the effect of the tax increase that would be required to make the new budget look like the current budget.
But that just sounds like spin to me. I know that Dale Kramer is a brilliant guy, but the reality is the LBB was not asked to put this in context. They were asked to score this budget.
Well, the LBB did their job and sort of got in trouble for it.
Well, and what Dale's saying basically is that you know, the LBB was right so far as they went, but they didn't go far enough. Actually, the legislature has two choices here. And one choice is to cut the budget to fit the amount of revenue they have. The other choice is to increase the amount of revenue to write the budget that they want. And both of those options, in his formulation, would cost a bunch of jobs.
Right. But, you know, when you talk to Bill Hammond over the Texas Association of Business, he...
As every journalist does.
Right. All the time.
All the time.
Speed dial.
Everybody's third paragraph,
Bill Hammond. I'm texting with him during the podcast. Right. But he...
Hey now.
He put out a report, you know, over a month ago, saying, "Here's a way to raise $15 billion for the budget," and me, as the head of a big business organization, thinks that's just great, and it's not going to cost jobs. And a lot of it was cost shifting, some fees. I mean, raising a car tag fee isn't going to cost anyone's job. The business taxes are low enough in the state that some people say, you raise that a little bit, it's not going to make everyone all of a sudden decide they want to move to New Jersey with their businesses. I mean, that may still cost jobs in the state, even if they remain in the state. But, Bill Hammond put out, here's $15 billion that we think you can find, and we're for it, and we don't think it'll have a negative impact on business.
So here's the exercise. I mean, we've talked about this before. You put out this budget, and it's the most horrible budget you can possibly imagine.
Right.
And then the next budget that you put out. So the budget that they put out at the beginning of the session did X. And now the House is going to vote this week on a budget that is still horrible, but $8 billion less horrible than the budget they had at the beginning of the session. They're going to send this budget to the Senate, which is writing a, you know, a budget that spends quite a bit more money than the House does. Then they go to conference for 2 months, and they start whittling on this thing. And they're trying to make the cuts less horrible. They're trying to whittle away the number of jobs that this will cost if you cut, you know, whatever it is. They're trying to get rid of all the bad things. But right now we're in the part of the process. I know the governor likes it when we talk about process, right? We're in the part of the process where they're presenting a list of horrible things which they will rescue us from during the next 2 months, supposedly. And the budget that we finally get is going to be, maybe it's going to be bad, but it's not going to be the budget that we're looking at this week.
So I want to come back, though, to the original point, which is the question of whether the LBB did anything wrong and whether Dale Kramer's response sufficiently rebuts what the LBB proposed. I think if you're going to criticize anybody in this conversation, Mike Villarreal, perfectly nice guy, Democrat in San Antonio, he's being a little dishonest in jumping on the LBB. Because the fact is, what does Villarreal think the LBB should have done? What the LBB did was say, this is the impact of the deal. Or he's maybe he's not jumping on the LBB. He's jumping, pardon me, on the critics of the LBB.
Yes, right.
Well, the fact is, there is where there's dishonesty. Because if Villarreal is jumping on the critics for jumping on the LBB, surely he recognizes that, as you say, if we raise, this is where the Dale Kramer thing is operative.
Right.
That if we raise taxes as an alternative to what the current budget does, that the jobs would have also been lost in that scenario. And so to I think that
well,
maybe
he's asked for the speaker to request another
Villarreal
report.
Has asked.
Yeah. Another report saying run this with taxes and new revenue and do another report.
We'll, and the speaker won't do that. The speaker has said that he will not do that, right?
You know what Kramer did, and you know, I'm a little bit on that side here, is say that the LBB was right but incomplete. It's not a complete analysis. It's right as far as it goes. But that you have to consider the alternative, and the alternative here, or one of the alternatives here, is what if you raise $13 billion in taxes to make this balance? That would cost X number of jobs.
Right.
Another alternative is kind of the Hammond thing. What if you, a nip and a tuck here and there, and it wasn't taxes, and you managed to make this thing, you know.
I want to just be sure that my point is clear, that it's not so much Villarreal, but the people who are critical of this budget and say, oh, this budget is going to cost jobs, need to understand that there is a second calculation
right.
that has to be made.
Right.
You're not considering this budget in a vacuum. It's not this budget versus not this budget. It's this budget versus a different budget that achieves the ends you want but has different consequences that may be as dire. The fact is we have a bad economy. The fact is we have a bad budget, and the fact is jobs are going to be lost. They can be lost this way or they can be lost that way, but they're going to be lost. And what people seem to be doing is playing a great big game of shoot the messenger.
Right.
The LBB did its job.
Right.
And I don't think that the LBB getting into crosshairs here helps anything or makes any sense or squares at all with the facts.
It'll all disappear this week. I mean, you know, the House is taking up the budget on the floor for the first time, and nobody really knows what's going to happen out there. On Thursday, you know, we're recording this on Wednesday. On Thursday, they'll vote on using part of the rainy day fund to get rid of a $4.3 billion deficit in the current biennium and some other cuts in the budget. So they're going to get a test vote there of 90 votes required to get into the rainy day fund. On Friday, they take up the full budget, and they have something like 380 amendments. And we'll see bit by bit, you know, how the House is on this stuff. The hardest position to be in may be that of a suburban Republican. So you're here from a conservative district. You have Tea Party people at home. You have people who want to cut the state government, et cetera, et cetera. You're also representing a community that was formed largely around the idea of we can afford the houses out here. We want good schools for our kids. We're raising families. And what are you doing firing teachers? It's a really interesting line to work.
I want to come back to something you skated over quickly because I know that the Friday activity is more interesting, but I want to know whether the House has the 90 votes to pass the rainy day fund deal.
They say they do, but if you walk around,
who says they do?
Well, Pitts does. Jim Pitts, the appropriations chairman, who's carrying this thing,
has he showed you the list?
Hasn't showed me the list. And interestingly, if you walk around and you say to random members, "So, has anybody asked you how you're going to vote on this thing?" No.
Maybe Jim Pitts is just going to ghost vote for all of them.
Hard to find people who
it can happen. Sure.
You have to have 3/5 of the members present. So if everybody's there, 150 people in the House, you have to have 90 votes.
Right.
If you only have 85 votes, then you got to have 5 or 6 people, you know, just leave the building for a little bit. Right.
But I wanted to say I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that that gets done.
Well, it becomes very interesting if it doesn't. I mean, if you go in on Thursday and you don't have the 90 votes for the supplemental, then you got to figure out whether you're going to go with the budget on Friday or whether you're going to go back to the well,
Because you have a delay, right?
Well, because the budget, the supplemental, if you don't pass the rainy day fund on the supplemental, then the next budget doesn't work because it assumes
the math
that,
doesn't work.
Well, the current budget doesn't work. At some point, if you
right,
if
the current
you,
yes,
you
right, but the assumptions made in the budget you're looking to pass on Friday take into account the fact that you're using part of the rainy day fund to account for the
that you don't have to spend current revenue for backwards.
And in fact, if you don't do the thing on Thursday, the budget on Friday is short another $2 billion for public education. So, yeah, there is a ripple through this.
It affects it.
But if you don't pass the Thursday stuff, if you don't get into the rainy day fund, you bring the controller in and you say, all right, controller, at what date before the end of August do you have to stop writing checks? You're $4.3 billion short of what you're obligated to spend in the current budget.
And, you know, well, that's but the assumption is the rainy day fund portion is only $3.1 billion, right? So, in fact, of the four...
It's only three-fourths of the deficit.
Yeah, yeah, but what I'll be clear about is that even if they don't pass the rainy day fund thing, the other $1.3 billion or $1.2 billion that still has to come out is coming out in other ways, and that's not impacted by the vote on
Thursday. It's in the other bill that might not pass
Thursday. It's in the Friday. Oh, I see. So
there's
in fact,
two bills on Thursday. One of them is cuts. One of them is rainy day.
Right. So, in fact, you could not approve the rainy day fund money and still get the other billion and change, or you could just not get any of that money.
Right.
Wow. Would that just ruin people's weekends more? They're already anticipating like 370 some odd amendments on.
It would be it's not fatal, but it would be sort of a train wreck moment.
How long did it take for the voter ID bill to go through that process with?
Was it 9 hours?
50 amendments.
It was about 11 hours.
It was within a day.
So if you got 376 amendments, how's that going to go?
Slowly.
And how long will they be there?
This is
a couple days.
This is Ross's extensive experience.
Yeah, they'll be there a couple days. I mean, you know what'll happen? They'll come in with 374 amendments, and over the course of this thing, they'll say, "Well, this looks just like that other thing," and this looks like just. They'll only have to deal with about 200 of them.
They'll send people up to the mic.
Will you be there the whole time?
I'll be there. Yeah, tag teaming with Ton.
And I'll be there.
Ben will be there.
Hey now,
Burka. Burka be there.
I don't know. You'll have to call Burka.
I will have to.
Tag teaming with Ton is going to be a new feature on our.
I think if you're deeply fascinated by this, you know, Texas TXLEGE is the hashtag that everybody's using on Twitter for this stuff. If you're just dying to follow the inch by inch debate over the state over the preliminary state budget, holy cow! First, get a life. Second,
can we talk about the budget for one more second?
One more second.
Who? Okay, that's my 1 second. Who is likely to support this budget on Friday under current circumstances? The voter ID and the abortion bills have roughly ended up breaking down along partisan lines. You know, roughly 100 Republicans, roughly 50 Democrats, or 40. You know, 149, 148. Is it going to be a party line vote on Friday for the budget?
My hunch is that the budget itself is going to be more or less a party line vote. It'll be, you know, Pitts will be saying this isn't the final budget. In fact, you're already hearing this from the speaker and from some other people. This is not the final budget. This is to move the budget to conference committee, and the final budget will be in May. So, you know, don't get your panties in a wad here.
Won't the final budget be in August?
Well, that
or
may
some, or some month, right?
That may be. But, you know, they're going to sell this as a process vote and not as a final vote. You know, you won't get killed here. I think on the amendments, the House is going to – it's going to depend on the amendment. There's a – I think one of the – for these purposes, there's a pretty good analysis of the House and that the parties each have about a third of the House. The Democrats have about a third. The moderate Republicans have about a third, and the conservative Republicans have about a third. And I think on any given issue, you're going to see weird blocks. But on the final budget, I think the Republicans will stick together.
You were talking about people not getting killed on these votes. Aren't a lot of these votes actually helping some of the members? I mean, don't a lot of the, especially the new conservative Tea Party members, need that vote on, I voted for a budget that cut absolutely everything with no new revenue?
Sure. I mean, you know, everybody... You know, there's 150 individual decisions here. There's going to be decisions inside the amendments, you know, whether you're voting on, you know, I mean, they're as varied as the lines of the budget are. But, you know, you may be for the budget, but you're against that amendment that Pitts wants. You may be against the budget, but you're for that amendment. There'd be all kinds of variations.
But speaking of revenue, let's talk about gambling for a bit. You know,
it's going to be a very short conversation, according to Duncan.
Right. I talked to Duncan yesterday. He said it's not – just that he's against gambling. It's that he doesn't think he could
that
get
he's
it.
He's really against
well,
gambling.
It's that he doesn't think he could get it. He doesn't think he could get it out of his committee. He doesn't think that you could get the votes on the Senate floor to bring it up. It requires 2/3. And he doesn't see any reason to waste the time, given that the House may not pass the thing anyway. So why not just let the House do what it's going to do? And if the House sends a bill over, then you can take the issue up.
But
and otherwise,
this-
you know, why waste your time?
Wasn't this supposed to be like the session of gambling? All the polls show the Texans want it.
Yeah, but you got a problem of a very conservative House in particular and many members who view revenue from gambling as problematic for two reasons, because it's revenue and because it's from gambling.
Right.
Right. They came into office elected by constituents who in theory said, we don't think the problem is not enough revenue. We think the problem is too much spending. So their mandate was to cut, right, not add. And there's a moral component to gambling that just runs afoul of some people's sensibilities.
Well, a lot of people that aren't moralists, they just think it's kind of a skanky way for a state to raise money. That's just, you know, it's just, eh.
Yeah, like we haven't raised money.
Right, right. Yeah, cigarettes are okay.
In full-on no. skanky fashion previously.
Cigarettes and alcohol are cool, but not gambling. So basically, Duncan doesn't think its chances are very good. He doesn't think the income stream is reliable and cites, you know, bingo and horses and, you know, to some extent the lottery, and says, you know, if the House passes it, we'll look at it again. But I think that's a pretty high.
Is this anything that gains momentum as we go into, if we go into special sessions on the budget?
I mean, it could. You know, the biggest problem I think the gambling people have is that the gambling people don't agree with the gambling people. And they're not presenting
Tracks versus casinos. Tracks
versus casinos versus bingo. There's a proposal to put, if you're going to allow slot machines at Tracks, why don't you allow it in every bingo hall in the state, every truck stop at the state? If you can't get the people promoting a deal to all agree on the deal that they're promoting, it becomes easy for the legislature to say, why don't you guys get your stuff straight before you come back to us?
But if you go back to the LBB report, you know, one of the things Strauss's response was basically, you know, a report that says requiring the legislature to live within its means is not a bad thing. But is there some point where its means are not livable? You know, and when you look at this report and you see this many jobs lost, which is not necessarily because of the budget, but it's also because of the downturn in the economy, you know, is there some sort of revenue somewhere that has to be considered? And if, you know, gambling, which has all this popular support, you know, and other measures don't, you know, do they have to look at some revenue somewhere?
You ultimately have to decide, and this is what the legislature is doing right now, you ultimately have to decide whether the programs that you promised, the services that you promised, are more important than your promise to hold costs down. And you have to find the balance point in there. I think part of the reason that the legislators are kind of itchy right now is because they don't really have a clean read on the voters. They don't know.
Well, but as Reeve says, the polling, it's not just our polling, but polling generally shows that gambling is supported.
I don't think anybody gets beat on gambling. I think you could get beat on the idea that you increased revenue for the state. As Evan said, there is a group out there that says any new dime for the government
Of course,
is a bad dime.
The difference is that gambling revenue is not revenue that is mandatory for everybody to contribute. Gambling is basically a user fee. If you choose to use it, then you pay. But legalizing gambling doesn't constitute the same grievous sin as imposing a tax would in the minds of a lot of people.
I think that's probably true. I mean, if you look at the polling, I think that's probably right.
Yeah.
Although you have a sort of not in my backyard problem, right? It's like, oh, gambling's great. Someone else's county.
Right. I don't want that track or that. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. The biggest proposal, the destination casino proposal, would put two casinos in Dallas County, one in Tarrant County, one in Bexar County, two in Harris County, and then would have two for the barrier islands, so either Corpus, South Padre, or Galveston.
Nothing in Travis County.
Oh, well,
not in our backyard.
The horse track in Travis County would not be able to get a Rosino, right?
Yeah, not big enough.
Can I bet on Formula One?
Sure, why not? Only in Euros.
Can we just put slot machines in the Tribune office?
Well, hopefully. I was hoping for bingo. Personally.
You want bingo?
Yeah.
Wagering on banana grams?
Do you think Ramshaw would let people be yelling out numbers in the middle of the newsroom all day?
I want to.
Hey, now. Right. If you think she's the mother superior of the office now, you wait.
All right. Let's move on before this gets.
Julian starts yelling G20 in the middle of trying to get a story done for the Times. It's a big problem right now.
Well, so speaking of yelling in the newsroom, let's talk about singing in the courtroom and the state of our criminal justice system.
Nicely done, Reeve.
Yes. I planned that one months ago.
Ages ago. Yeah. Before Willie Nelson was even busted. Right.
It was a matter of time.
Right. So there was a bit of a kerfuffle, you might say. Everyone was excited. Willie Nelson is being put up for a possession of marijuana charge. And he was going to
Who's excited about that?
Well, they weren't excited about that, but the word was that he was going to have to sing for his, to get out of it.
His sentence was going to become sing for what?
It was plead guilty, so it plead, was pay a fine, and it was sing blue eyes crying in the rain in the courthouse. That was going to be – that was the proposal floated by the county attorney or the local attorney in Hudspeth County. And they've now walked that back, way back.
Now they say, oh, it was just a joke. You, you know, guys don't have any sense of humor.
Only kidding. So only are they going to let him plea out?
I don't know. Have you ever seen that? I think so, but I think they won't have to sing now.
Well, they're
now it's actually now the sentence is more lenient. He doesn't even have to sing.
They're in such a position now that they really can't impose anything ridiculous because they've already used up the ridiculous card on the first proposal.
I honestly think it would have been. I think there's nothing wrong with flexible sentencing and
communist.
And he could have put that on iTunes.
Ted Poe.
He could have recorded.
He did this kind of stuff. He did this kind of sentencing when he was a judge. He's a congressman.
And it sent him all the way to D.C. you could have recorded that, put it on iTunes, and raised all sorts of money.
What about having a county fundraising?
Sentence him to Farm Aid.
It would have been bigger than Rebecca Black. Which you don't even know.
I don't even know who that is. You got three guys over 40, Reed. Good luck making that reference. Who the hell is that?
She's sort of the Larry Sanders of the new generation.
Is she?
Well, someone might write in there.
And you are the garden weasel of podcasts, which is a Larry Sanders joke that you will discover much later in the season. I think that the idea of Willie playing a concert in Hudspeth County to raise money for local drug awareness efforts for the schools might have been an interesting proposal floated, but having him come in and perform a private concert for this idiotic county attorney is ridiculous. It's ridiculous, but they're going to have to resolve this case somehow. And, you know, let's not even consider the fact that the idea of them arresting Willie for marijuana possession near like the end of Casablanca.
It's like arresting Popeye for spinach.
Exactly. I mean, I don't know, this is a good use of time.
If it's ridiculous to arrest someone for breaking the law just because you know they break the law all the time, why is it ridiculous to give them a silly sentence based on their celebrity status?
I don't think it's ridiculous to arrest somebody for breaking the law. He broke the law. I do think it's ridiculous to make such a huge to-do out of it.
Because that's not even helpful for the county. I mean, like Evan was saying, you know, have a charity concert for the county or for some program within the county, that's like community service, right? But him performing a concert in the middle of the chambers isn't community service.
It feels like a show trial. It feels like they did this with the express intent of attracting attention to Hudspeth County, and they did, just not the kind they intended.
I wonder if the county attorney's running for the Senate or something, you know? Everybody else is. Why
not? He's not now.
Right. So, Ross, how does this relate to the budget?
Not at all. in a way that I can fathom.
What is Dale Kramer smoking?
Well, anyway, if we didn't have any audio this week, so if we have some audio of Blue Eyes Crying in the Rain, we'll tag it on to the end of this podcast.
Todd, that would be don't violate copyright, because then we'd have to all go to court.
If we don't, we'll just play ourselves
Hudspeth
out in the normal way.
Right.
So just, you know, stay tuned for that. And in the meantime, if you have questions or comments, email podcasts@texastribune.org. On behalf of Evan, Ross, Ben, our producer Todd, I'm Reeve Hamilton. Thanks for listening.
In the twilight glow, I see her. Blue eyes crying in the rain. And when we kissed goodbye and parted, I knew we'd never meet again.